the roll to make sure everyone has returned from recess.
Director Bronstein, are you present?
Present.
Director Ford, are you present?
Present.
Director Cooper, are you present?
Present.
Director Atkins, are you present? I'll come back. I'm sorry. Director Atkins, present. Are you present? Thank you. Present. I love your background. That's really pretty. Director Planbeck, are you present?
Yes, I'm here.
Director Kelly, are you present? Director Armitage, are you present?
Present.
Director Colley, are you present?
I'm here.
Director Osohosky, are you present?
Present.
Vice President Mortensen, are you present?
Present.
Vice President Gladbach, are you present?
Yes.
President Martin, are you present?
I am present.
Let's try Director Kelly one more time. Director Kelly, are you present? Back to you, President Martin.
All right, this time I will ask staff to respond to the public and board questions that you've heard tonight.
Hey, everyone. Hopefully you had your break. We're going into round two here. I'm going to just kind of go in order of the questions, may pass it off here and there to different staff and consultants just to help address specific questions. So the first question we're going to address is regarding contamination in the nickel water being considered. This was the semi-tropic and nickel water supplies. This question was addressed in the last public hearing, but I'm going to repeat it. So basically the nickel water is a surface water supply. Most often it gets put into the semi-tropic banking facilities. At the time that it gets extracted, and it does have arsenic in it because those facilities do contain arsenic contamination, the semi-tropic banking facility has a water treatment at their facility, and they have to meet the DWR pumping criteria to get water into the aqueduct before it's delivered to us. So any water quality concerns from the nickel water supplies or the semi-tropic water supplies are addressed at that facility before it gets delivered to us. I'm going to go to the next one. So the next question is regarding to, is drought changing? Is it developing differently than it used to, or do we see the same patterns? There's really no discernible change in drought patterns. The hydrology in California remains extremely variable. I mean, this California has the most extreme hydrology. We've got the dry years, we've got wet years. It goes back and forth. And, you know, all that I read regarding climate change is that the dry years will get drier, the wet years will get wetter, but it's really difficult to say overall how are the patterns going to be. So that's why we take the historical hydrology and the variability and apply climate change information to that to try to make our best estimates about what the future conditions are going to be for us, and we plan around that. The next question is regarding being nervous about active conservation not being enough. And our analysis regarding active conservation notes that these opportunities do persist for future. It will most likely be required by a state mandate that we do continue active conservation programs. And our water supply use efficiency strategic plan identifies connection between the available known water efficiency measures and our actual water use demand. So it looks ahead and it lets us know how much these new programs will impact our demands. And so that's what those estimates are based on. The Water Use Efficiency Strategic Plan will be updated based on the AB 1668 and SB 606 requirements once the guidance is finalized, and it's gonna build upon that current and historic performance. So that will be another plan that you get to dive into a little bit more as we move forward. Yay. Next question is, a lot of the well information seems based on the GSA, and generally the GSA is a public process that has analyzed the groundwater operating plan for sustainability. And it's really the most current and detailed analysis that's available and has been conducted in compliance with all of the DWR requirements for the groundwater sustainability plans. And so in the urban plan, all, you know, really what we're meant to do in the urban plan with regards to the GSA is coordinate with them to, you know, be consistent with the information that we're providing throughout both plans. Sometimes challenging in that the GSP hasn't been completed yet. So we don't have the final results for that plan to incorporate in the urban plan, but both will be updated and we'll coordinate that information as best we can. The next question I'm going to pass to Courtney, but it's regarding using recycled water for grading. And can we do that? And so I'm going to pass that to Courtney Miller in engineering to help with that.
Thank you very much. Yes, recycled water is allowed for grading per Title 22, specifically for dust control. The use of recycled water is site specific and needs to be contemplated in the project EIR. It also is going to require county health approval. I can tell you that Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency is working on recycled water fill station design to accommodate the future use of recycled water for construction purposes. But that project is still in design, still under review.
Thank you, Courtney. The next comment is regarding water testing for the Newhall groundwater wells, and are there issues with these wells? And I'm actually going to have Mike Alvord help us answer that question more efficiently than I can.
Hey, Sarah. But I want to see everybody smile. You guys look so serious. Smile a little bit. Take a deep breath. So we currently have 4 permitted e-wells along the Highway 126 and Castaic Creek. All 4 are permitted. 2 are pending, and the other 2 are currently in use and approved sources and meet all Title 22 regulatory constituent requirements. So that's it.
Thank you, Mike.
Sarah, that wasn't my question, or maybe Mike didn't hear it. It was the agricultural wells, not the e-wells. I know you're getting water from the e-wells. The agricultural wells in the fields were going to be used, or are they going to just use the e-wells?
No, they'll be replacement wells, right? So we will not use any agricultural wells. They're all M&I replacement wells.
Okay, thank you.
And sorry about that, Director Planback. Thank you for clarifying. It's hard to get all these questions. You guys are fast. The next question is regarding pulling water from the Saugus, and could that affect the alluvial supply? And information from GSI says that the groundwater model in support of the GSP development does take into account this relationship of the alluvial and Saugus supplies, and all of that is incorporated into the sustainability objectives for the basin. The next question I'm going to pass to BJ Leckler from Jacobs. Regarding, BJ, maybe you could clarify the question. I'm a little confused by it as well as the answer.
Sure, yeah, I think the question is related to the appropriateness of the groundwater model for developing the groundwater sustainability plan. And so I'll just briefly describe what the peer review group has done. You know, the group has provided comments and conducted workshops and received responses to those comments from the groundwater modeling team related to the 3 documents supporting development of the groundwater sustainability plan. And those documents include a document related to the groundwater model development and calibration, the development of the water budgets, and the sustainable management criteria in the plan. And so based on the review and the responses that we've received, indicating how the comments are going to be addressed, the expert review panel members have concluded that the model is an appropriate tool for developing the groundwater plan. The group is in the process of preparing a final report to document these findings. So you're right that there isn't anything formalized, but we are in the process of preparing a report that will be shared probably in the next month or so.
Thank you. The next question I'm going to pass to Dirk, it's regarding a DWR capacity results for the Delta.
So the comment to be was that we would not necessarily have to use the delivery capability report that we do use in the plan, that we could use other sources that might take into consideration what I believe the concern was supply constraints caused by possibly a lack of capacity in the aqueduct or other potential constraints. And with respect to the constraints associated with reduced capacity in the aqueduct, we don't see that as being a limiting factor as far as providing water supply to the extent that there have been some reductions in aqueduct capacity. Those have taken place in the further northern parts of the aqueduct system. And we are not, when we looked at those available capacities, we did not see them constraining deliveries of water into our service area or our groundwater banking programs.
Thank you. And Dirk, I think you're up on the next one too. There were a lot of questions about the addendum for the 2015 urban plan.
So the addendum deals with reduced reliance on the Delta. And I think the comment made by Director Planbeck dealt with the potential that the agency could actually increase the physical amount of water being delivered from our imported sources as we move out through time. So the reduced reliance on the Delta is somewhat a term of art. Kind of a reduced dependence on the Delta might be a little bit more accurate description of what they start with or what they're describing. So those calculations start with a base dependence on the Delta, and those were associated with the baseline, which they used 2010 information as being that baseline, because that was the first urban plan that followed preparation or followed the passing of the legislation that created the Delta Stewardship Council. So that is what they insist that we use for baseline. So the calculation starts with what are the state water project supplies that are available to the agency, not necessarily what they're using, but what's available at that point in time. And then as you move out in time, we receive credits for the amount of conservation as conservation programs are implemented. We receive credit for future development of recycled water. Additionally, as we increase supplies from groundwater as a result of the Newhall Ranch development, that further reduces the percentage of our supplies that we would necessarily have to be taken from the Delta, or could potentially take from the Delta. So those are the base. That's the basis of that calculation. I hope that helps to clarify.
The next question that we have is with regards to the nickel water, and there was a request to hear from council whether it's appropriate that public funds are used to pay to transport water from storage.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you for the question, Director Armitage. I believe I saw it in the comment letter from Friends of the River. There is no legal problem. I think it's not quite an accurate statement. The nickel water is being brought into the equation by Newhall Land and Farming. You know, once it's transferred, it becomes part of the supply that SCV Water will have, and it'll move to us in ways that other supplies move to us from that region. So they're essentially bringing that, and there's nothing that prohibits a developer from bringing their own water supply to the table.
Thank you, Joe. The next question was with regards to well production data and how we utilize the maximum capacity versus what we can actually pump. And I believe that there was a request to see kind of that range. And so there's a lot of groundwater tables that are incorporated in the urban plan, section 4 specifically. And table 4.8 regards to the alluvial supplies, and it's a well by well table, which outlines what we're permitted to pump, the maximum amount that we're permitted to pump. We translate that into the maximum amount. And this is making the assumption that we're using this well 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, all year round, which is clearly not the way that we operate our facilities. From there in these tables, what we do is we break down our best assumptions for how we're going to operate each well specifically in a normal year versus a dry year. And again, this is where we kind of get into that conjunctive use pattern, where we try to back off of our local groundwater supplies when it's a wet imported water year and the state water project is high. And then we lean on those supplies more heavily in the dry years, you know, with the limitations that those wells can accommodate. So 4.8 tables are more specifically related to the alluvial supplies. And then we do the same thing in table 4.9, where we get into the details for the Saugus wells. And those include the existing and all of the future wells. In addition to those tables, we've provided even more information because the tables in the plan text are 5-year increments. And again, we know that the next 10 years is really important with regards to supplies coming online. So in the appendices, we've included really detailed information, and it aligns with how are we going to operate in the next 10 years, as shows the impacted wells coming back online and that shift of pumping from existing well supplies to some of those new impacted well supplies as they come online. So hopefully that helps address that. The ranges are there for the normal and the dry year. And then the permitted capacity is really just to show that, you know, we're allowed to pump a lot more. And if needed, we have that flexibility from well to well, but it, you know, that represents way more production than we would ever utilize based on our operating plans. And then the next question is with regards to the semi-tropic bank. And it was a question about, is there a limitation on the number of years we can draw from these banks consecutively? And, you know, yes, there is a limitation on how often we can draw from these, you know, basically we can draw on them until our storage is gone. And one of the things that we look at as we analyze our banking facilities is how often are we planning to depend on these wells to help us make up additional supplies that may be happening from a dry year, maybe happening from, you know, a loss of alluvial wells from PFAS. So there's a lot of different situations, and we utilize the reliability model that we have, and we've prioritized our supplies based on which ones we generally lean on first. And it does this whole calculation for us that analyzes, you know, takes that 82 years of hydrology, and it goes through that sequence of, okay, we're pulling from the bank supplies these years, we are putting water back in those supplies these years. So it helps us balance those supplies and gives us a better idea of how long those supplies will last. And often, because there is that frequent variability in the wet and the dry years, and we take all the opportunity we can to put water back in the banks when we have it, those supplies actually end up kind of not being used at the end of their agreement. So that, you know, they're available all the way up to the end of the agreement. Dirk, did you want to add something to that?
I'll take the next item.
Okay.
Can I ask a follow-up to that?
Yeah.
So the way it's listed in the table, though, doesn't it technically show that there's more water than there really is? I mean, we're assuming that we may not use it every year, and that's the way I'm understanding it's listed for those years, for each of those time spans.
Which table are you looking at, like the multi-dry year table or a single dry year table? Which table are you looking at? Because for a single dry year, you know, we're talking about if a single dry year occurs in any of those five-year increments. So if a single dry year occurs in 2025 or 2035, what supplies do we anticipate having available at that time to meet that demand? And so in those tables, you know, we're assuming that the wells, the banking programs have water available to meet demands in a single dry year. When we go into a multiple dry year scenario, we're taking an average of 5 years. We're looking at that worst case scenario situation, and we're averaging the supplies together. And for that table, we actually utilize the reliability model. So when we're looking at 2035, we modeled 2035 with all of the hydrology prior to that to let us know, would we have the available supplies in 2035 for that consecutive five-year scenario? And so I don't know if that makes it a little more confusing. It backs up our assumptions, and basically the model is letting us know, yes, based on historical hydrology in all of those years, the supplies we have listed on the table, we assume will be there based on our model and how we've looked at those scenarios through time. And then Dirk, I guess you're gonna address the next question regarding the New Holland semi-tropic agreements.
I thought that the next question dealt with the addendum.
Oh, okay. First, I'm going to address a question that we had regarding the New Holland semi-tropic pulling supply from, let's see, is it okay for us to pull supply from these, is it okay for us to show available supply if the agreements are not in place yet? And so the nickel agreement is in place, that supply will be available to SCV Water once the specific plan is completed. The semi-tropic is committed for the project, but it does not have an agreement yet. And so in the urban plan, we assume that will happen, but there is no specific agreement for that supply to be turned over to SCV Water. And then Dirk, I guess you're going to go next on the addendum. Dirk, are you there?
Yeah, let me
okay.
Get unmuted here.
Thank you.
I think the question was, what's the source data for the numbers that are in tables K2 and K3 in the addendum? So it's a mixture of various different sources for different years. The 2010 baseline was actually, and this is as we were instructed by TWR and the Delta Stewardship Council, the baseline service area demands are those that you find in the 2005 urban plan, because the 2010 urban plan doesn't address 2010 demands, normalized demands. To get that information, they have us go back to the 2005 plan. So then the 2015 data comes from information in the 2010 plan. 2020 comes from information in the 2015 urban plan. And then moving forward from there, then that information for the years 25, 30, 35, 40, those are based on information that's been developed for our 2020 urban plan. And of course, the demands in conservation are based on the work that Madaus has done. Lisa's here to get into any further detail of that's necessary on those parts. But hopefully that explains a rather esoteric calculation that they had us go through.
Could I ask a follow-up? So what I was specifically looking for was in table K3. Do you have it in front of you by any chance?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so in table K3, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 row down, or 7th row, I guess, technically, it says local and regional water supply and storage projects, and it lists 42,000 under baseline. Well, I mean, for any of the years, I'm just wondering what are the sources of water that were calculated to get those numbers in that row?
So those are local groundwater supplies, recycled supplies, I believe, are the main components that's shown in that row. And storage projects. I believe that's what those numbers represent, Director Armitage, although
I'm asking because it says storage. Back. Well, because it says storage projects, but doesn't some of our storage water come from the State Water Project, which I would think go against the objective of this and doing the localized projects. That's why I was confused by that.
Trying to recall, it's been some while since I've gone through that. Definitely got the groundwater in there.
It'd be okay if we got back to you on that and and explain it a little further once we do a little more research? Just hard to do kind of spur of the moment and want to make sure we get you a good answer.
No, sure. I understand. I mean, I feel like that's kind of, this is a big part of the document that we're going to be asked to approve tonight. So, yeah. Sorry, I don't mean to cause a wrinkle, but it does just...
Why don't we continue on, and as they say, see if I can pull up my worksheet.
Okay, thank you.
Well, we only really had one other question from Director Cooper, wanting to know how many professional water resource planners, consultants, and engineers worked on the plan. And I made my best guesstimate, and the team didn't disagree. So my best guess is upwards of about 30 or more staff contributed to this effort. So it was a lot of people and a lot of expertise and a lot of support staff as well. So I'm sure I've lowballed the estimate here, but you know, in all, I think the directors have made so many wonderful comments, and you know, it is definitely my intention to capture all of the comments that were made, make sure that future urban plans include, we can kind of be ahead of the game and include a lot of the suggestions that were made. You know, we do appreciate all the comments. This is a huge effort, and I just want to thank all of our supporting staff and the team again. This is a team effort, and we're successful together, as well as with all of your support. So I think that concludes all of the questions.
All right. Are there any other members of the board who would like to ask a question while Dirk is looking for, well, we have a couple of hands up already. So Dirk can continue to look for his worksheet. Director Ozahowski, you have your hand up.
Yes. Director Armitage, what page are you on the plan?
I am on page K-4 of the addendum, or I guess appendix K.
Page 681 of the PDF too, if you're looking at the electronic version.
Thank you. That's all for me.
All right, Director Armitage, you have another question or comment?
Well, a couple of my questions didn't get answered. So the one about the baseline population, which is listed as 301,774, which is higher than the subsequent year. So I wanted to ask about that. And then the other comment that I had made, or question I had, was the terminology that's used on page K5. Let's see, sorry. Which is, I have here in quotes, demands with water use efficiency. Is that the same as what we're referring to in the urban water management plan as demands with passive and active conservation? So those are the two questions. Thanks.
And I'm going to have Lisa Madaus answer the question about baseline population. If you could do that, Lisa.
Sure. I will qualify that I worked on the 2015 UWMP in the demand study, and also this 2021. I did not produce the 2010 UWMP. However, we look at those. That was a, so as you may expect, that we anchor a lot of our population projections in census data, and those census numbers frequently come in subsequent, you know, to us actually turning in this UWMP. We're doing this work, like right now we don't have the 2020 census data yet in hand, so we actually are developing estimates. Oftentimes population will be a little bit higher, and then when we get the census data, it is modified and becomes a more true up estimate. And for many utilities across the state in 2010, that was definitely the case, where the 2010 was overestimated. We had a lot of population actually that exited during the recession, California. So that it was pretty universal across water utilities that we saw 2010 population estimates higher than the census data actually came in, that then we used that for our application in 2015 and in our further data analysis. Does that help answer your question? Or it?
Wait, so
the 2010, the 310,000 is basically an estimate that was projected towards 2010. So that number was what was published, but we got subsequent better data, as we often do.
Okay, so that new data just didn't get reflected in this report.
Well,
I guess,
go ahead, Dirk. I mean, that's the source.
So it gets back to what
source data is.
The source data problem, yeah. Where they insist that we use previous urban water management plans. So there's been a marked change since 2005 of what the estimated population for our region would be, mm-hmm. with the implementation of the new general plan, the One Value, One Vision, that significantly reduced the population estimates from earlier on.
Along with regular census data updates. Yes.
Could we do like a footnote to indicate that somehow? It just seems like it's misleading.
We could certainly put a footnote.
Okay.
Some of the source data.
Some would explain in the text prior to the tables, but probably well worth putting a footnote in the tables.
Okay, yeah, that would help. Thank you.
And then to your second question, or go ahead, Dirk.
No, go ahead. Please finish.
Yeah, so the water use efficiency accounted for in the tables and the K tables in the appendix. And my interpretation is yes, that it includes both the passive and the conservation, active conservation, the way we define it in our 2020 UWMP other chapters, including Appendix F.
Okay, would it be possible to just use the same terminology so that there's no confusion over that too? Because I had assumed that when I was reading it, but then it was a little confusing to me that there was different language used for the different documents.
Sure, Dirk, or we can put a footnote just explaining, as we put other footnotes, that that's intended as a combination of both.
Yeah, I want to say those were tables that were given to us to fill out, to keep them all the same for every agency. So I think the best option would be to add a footnote to just help explain that it is the same. And we can definitely do that.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm, thank you.
Okay, now I see where the other numbers come from. The numbers that you see in the plan, Director Armitage, for local supplies, that's a combination of our local groundwater supplies, both the alluvium and the Saugus, as well as the 11,000 acre feet of the Buena Vista Rosedale water purchase program. Again, that's a supply that is not, that never makes its way to the Delta. So that's why that's considered a local program.
Thank you for clarifying that. I appreciate it.
Sure.
All right, are there any other, thank you, Dirk, and thank you, Lisa, for your clarification on those items. I do see another hand up, Director Planbeck. You have something to add or say? Director Planbeck?
Sorry. So this is a question following up with Michael Alford about the seawells. While everyone was talking and I was listening, I was also searching the document for where I saw that reference to the sea whales, and it's on page 4-35, and it says that exactly what he said, except that it says it's going to put it near the existing sea whales that are currently used for agricultural production for New Holland's operations. And what worried me about that, Mike, is simply that the sea whales that were currently used, as I recall them, were across from the landfill. And I wish, I mean, if it's further up and we're not doing that, I would be so happy. And I wish that would kind of get eliminated out of here, because I am concerned that if somebody started pumping those sea whales and there's leachate coming from under the landfill, it's going to pull it right into the whales out into the river, just like, you know, that first front part of the landfill is not lined. And who knows, there's not any water quality testing in the area. So I've been really concerned about that for a long time. And I've been concerned about using those whales because of that. So I don't know if you could just put it, not like eliminate that part about it's going to be near the existing sea whales, because if it's up by Castaic Junction, it's really not. I mean, the confluence of Castaic Creek and the river, it's really not by the sea whales. And that's what confused me. That's why I was asking you about that question in the first place.
I think I can probably address that. In the analysis for the GSP, there was an assumption that wells, that there would be wells placed in the sea well area with the purpose of trying to avoid impacts on groundwater dependent ecosystems. And even we recognize that the viability of that will be dependent on water quality results. And we have requested information regarding that from the developer.
And that's exactly was my question to Mike, is have we received any water quality information on those wells yet?
We have not. That is a pending request.
All right. Do we have any further questions from the board for staff to consider before we close the public hearing?
I have one. Director Martin.
Director Atkins, please go ahead.
If I'm not mistaken, the Chiquita Canyon landfill has a network of monitoring wells and a leachate monitoring system. So they have to prove that their landfill is not introducing leachate to the groundwater system. So I think staff could go and find that information in supplement to the water quality data that we just discussed.
Director Atkins, the monitoring wells are in the leachate system. They're not in the river. And the problem is that the front cell of that landfill is not lined. The leachate does, they don't test anything outside the leachate system. So you can find out the water quality of the leachate system. And I know this because I've been down to regional water quality and done that. But there are no monitoring wells that are outside in the river. And that is my concern. And the concern is even greater because the front cell of the landfill, the oldest section, is not lined.
Well, we'll have answers technically to that concern soon.
Are there any other questions or comments from the board before we close the public hearing? Hearing none. First, I want to thank the staff for, I've got a whole list of professionals who took part in the responses. And I tell you, we have a great staff, and it's kind of like an all-star staff. I have Sarah, Dirk, Mike, Mr. Leckler, Courtney, Matt Dickens, Lisa. I tell you, you got some really talented people on our staff, and I appreciate that. So I will now close the public hearing and move to item 5.2 for consideration of approving a resolution adopting the 2020 Urban Water Management Plan, and item 5.3, consideration of approving a resolution adopting the addendum to the 2015 Urban Water Management Plan. Each item will be voted on separately. And so we'll take item 5.2 first, and we will have a, I think we'll have a brief presentation by Sarah Fleury on this.
I do not have a presentation. I do not have another presentation.
All right, that's actually fine. I think we've heard enough to know what we're what we're voting on. So I would entertain a motion for approval of item 5.2, which is approve a resolution adopting the 2020 Urban Water Management Plan.
So moved, Director Ford.
Second, motion Director by Cooper. Motion by Director Ford, a second by Director Cooper. Are there any questions from the board before I ask for public comment? Well, first of all, I'd like clarification from Mr. Byrne. Since this is in the special procedures, does the public get to comment once again on this, or does this, should we just, you're shaking your head, yes, so.
Yeah, it's a separate item. I mean, obviously, if people can try to refrain from repeating comments that have been made, but yes, there should be given an opportunity.
All right, then I would ask, are there any public comments on this before we call for the vote?
It does not appear so, President Martin.
Very good. So we have a motion and a second. Please call the roll, Madam Secretary.
Director Olsohosky, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Armitage, how do you vote?
No.
Director Bronstein, how do you vote?
No.
Director Atkins, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Colley, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Ford, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Kelly, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Planbeck, how do you vote? I'll come back to Director Planbeck. Director Cooper, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Gladbeck, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Mortensen, how do you vote?
Yes.
One more time, Director Planbeck, how do you vote?
Sorry, I had my mic off. I vote no. I still have concerns about what's included in.
Thank you.
On a long-term basis.
President Martin, how do you vote?
Yes.
This item passes, and that's resolution number SCV-217.
Thank you, board. Thank you for the lively discussion and the vote. Thank you very much. We'll move on to item 5.3, approve a resolution adopting the addendum to the 2015 Urban Water Management Plan. And I will say to Ms. Fleury, I do have you listed as a presenter. So if you're not going to present, that would be fine too.
That is correct. I do not have an additional presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. Appreciate that. So I would entertain a motion for approval of the addendum, item 5.3.
Jerry moves.
Motion by Vice President Gladbach. Do I have
Atkins
a second?
Second.
A second by Director Atkins. Thank you, Director Atkins. Are there any questions on this before we call for public comment and then the vote? Hearing none, do we have any public comment on this, April?
It does not appear so.
Very good. We have a motion and a second. Please call the roll for the vote.
Director Cooper, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Atkins, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Plambeck, how do you vote?
No.
Director Ford, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Armitage, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Bronstein, how do you vote?
No.
Director Olsohowski, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Colley, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Kelly, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Mortensen, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Gladbeck, how do you vote?
Yes.
Yes. President Martin, how do you vote?
Yes.
This item passes, and that is resolution number SCV-218.
Thank you very much, Board. We now can move on to item six. We have one action item for approval, which is item 6.1, approve an ordinance for water conservation and water shortage. And I believe our presenter tonight is Matt Dickens.
Thank you, President Martin, and thank you to the members of the Board of Directors. Can you guys hear me okay? Also like to commend staff and members of the public for attending tonight, and thank you for again sharing another one of your evenings with us while we work on these very important planning documents and components of our water service here. Thank you. So tonight I'll be providing a very brief verbal presentation, which will discuss the water shortage, the water conservation and water shortage ordinance updates. As you recall, on June 9th, we provided a lengthy presentation and overview of the Water Conservation and Water Shortage Ordinance. The Board of Directors reviewed public comments were provided, and the Board of Directors provided some policy direction regarding specific language items to whereas, which would focus on SCV Water's prioritization of education and engagement. We'd also added specific language pertinent to watering established trees and food crops, updated provisions on the refilling of existing pools, filling of new pools, existing pools, and spa water level maintenance. We provided clarification on specific language to section 9.1H of new potable water service, and we also provided clarification on customer noticing protocols provided in section 11 of penalties and enforcement. So with that, we sent an updated water conservation and water shortage ordinance with staff and council's comments to incorporate the board's direction. And since then, I should also note that we received about 47 public comments, of which the vast majority of those comments are pertinent to the items discussed in section 9.1H regarding development. There were also a few comments regarding rates that associated with the water conservation and water shortage ordinance. And I would just note that the ordinance does not discuss rates or include rate components within the ordinance. So with that, I just want to clarify that particular comment. At this time, I believe you have the updated ordinance, and I would be happy to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you very much.
All right. Are there any questions from the board on the updated ordinance? Director Bronstein, you have your hand up.
I'm willing to hear this answer from any director too. Like, I'm curious, at what point how do we think we're getting to a 40% water shortage? I phrased that wrong, where we have to conserve 40%. Like, is it because we've been in drought for like 5 years or, and I've been asking staff and I'm just not getting an answer the answer that I'm getting is that something big has to happen where we're either cut off by our water from our main water supply, like earthquake, something big like that. And if that's not the only case that, like the most likely way that we're getting to that, I'd like somebody to explain that to me.
So Matt, this is Gary. I, It's my understanding that these shortage levels are mandated by the Department of Water Resources in the putting together of the Urban Water Management Plan and the Water Shortage Contingency Plan. Is that correct?
President Martin, the stage level reductions are requirements of the Planning Act. The likely causes of a water shortage are somewhat of a different question, but the staged responses, as they're identified in the plan as well as the ordinance, are mandated through guidance and from DWR.
Anybody want to jump in?
Yeah, I will. I apologize. I know you sent me an email yesterday and I was kind of wrapped up in our chlorine supply situation. I actually started to draft a response to you twice and got interrupted. I don't know if I can be of more help than what you got from staff, but part of the challenge is it's like you're doing earthquake planning, but you don't know what kind of earthquake you're going to have or exactly where the damage is going to hit. But if you wanted to think through scenarios that might lead to a 40% level shortage, essentially that means your available supply to provide to customers at that point in time or imminently in the event of a longer term unfolding event at that point in time in terms of an emergency. So those are kind of two forks in the logic tree, right? One is something sudden and you immediately invoke, you probably actually just invoke some kind of emergency, you know, public information and announcement, and then determine what stage you need to be in and proceed accordingly. In a longer unfolding situation, or maybe the third thought I had is a combination of things, which often is what happens when things get bad. There's a combination of things that happens. So it's kind of hard to tell you what it would be. I think the point is to have a plan that would spell out what steps you would take as you move through it. Certainly the drought plan is sort of grounded in, you know, an unfolding emergency. That's why there's stages that you would potentially move through, but you could in a true sudden emergency, you could move directly to a stage. I've thought about it a little bit. I mean, I think probably the things that might trigger it would be something that's just unprecedented beyond our planning and experience. So despite, you know, we just spent months and months trying to come up with a plan that is, you know, as airtight as we can get for reliability and various elements of our reliability planning. If we were to have something that was, you know, beyond that, or that in combination with some other disruption, an outage of a key facility, some other new as yet unimagined contaminant, you know, hits enough wells that we have to look at, you know, a gap in supply and demand. I think the important thing is to have the thinking in place as to how you would start to scale back in each stage. And as I know the board has discussed at the last meeting, and likely will at this meeting, you know, what are the relative priorities in each stage as you go through? So what I haven't been able to do and get the time to do is kind of work through, okay, well, here's some scenarios with some math to get you to 40%. But given that our state water project supply, you know, can be half of our deliveries in some years, you know, a physical outage very close to the service area might get you there. An outage further up the aqueduct might leave us with access to our Rosedale Rio Bravo water and our banked water. So it might not get you fully there, but it would depend on the ability to move water through the aqueduct in that situation. So I don't know if that helps, Director Bronstein, but it's kind of like which doomsday scenario would you like to?
I think that's the point of my question, really.
Yeah.
That it sounds to me that from talking to staff and different staff members, that really getting to 40% to stage four to 40% shortage is not something any of us expect to get to. You know, it's not like we're in a drought, so we're gonna have to cut back 40%. It sounds to me like something dramatic, you know, something big is going to happen. And for that reason, I don't understand why we think that we should still be approving new buildings when something catastrophic like that happens. I'm just trying to like add it up. If you know, if we're cut off, if we don't have stuff, then why are we still approving new buildings?
Yeah, I think if that's the question, that's more, you know, it is a policy question for the board to debate. And it was, you know, brought to, I think, our staff as a technical question about how would you get to a 40% shortage. Well, so,
I mean, that's what I'm trying to understand.
Yeah.
I'm trying to understand the logic of how this works, because I'll be the first one to admit that I'm new to this. And I, you know, to me, you know, I'm still learning what the appropriate response is to certain things, because I don't have the background. I don't have the knowledge. And so when I'm sitting with something like this, really all I have is asking the staff, who tend to be experts, and common sense. And so I'm trying to put those two together and I'm having a difficulty. So that's why I said, I'm willing to be enlightened if anybody else can help me here.
Well, I think pointing to the fact that it's a low probability event is probably correct. I mean, we hope it's a very low probability event. And so when weighing the relative impacts to all customers and all uses and all economic activity, certainly the low probability of the event should probably be included in that consideration. And as you go through each stage of shortage, the probability may be, you know, slightly higher, depending on what combination of events might invoke it.
Okay.
All right, before we go to Director Planbeck and Director Armitage, I'd like to ask Joe Byrne to provide his input on this.
Yeah, thank you, President Martin. So kind of two points. The first is that the ultimate decision maker is going to be the board. So it'll be, I assume, a dynamic situation in which the board will assess information that's brought to it from staff. And the second would be at the 40 to 50% reduction as drafted, and Matt can articulate, we wouldn't be approving any more new development. In fact, there'd be no new potable water provided. We would only be providing water to those people who already have a granted building permit, which is at the very end of the process.
That's the next one.
Stage four says 40%.
Okay, I thought you were referring to the stage five between 40. No.
Okay. That's what I'm saying. If we think that 40 is catastrophic, and we think that 40 is not likely, and we think that 40 is going to be created by something massive, then I'm wondering why we're still approving. We think that it's, I would like the assistance of, if anybody else here has insight to this, I want to learn, and I would love to hear other people's opinions, because this is a conversation. And I'm here to learn as well. You know, this is my perspective. I'd love to hear other perspectives.
Yeah, maybe there's a button.
All right, very good. Before I go to Director Armitage and Director Planbeck, perhaps I didn't phrase my comment in an understandable way. These are hypothetical shortage levels that are mandated by the state for us to consider in the water shortage contingency plan. It is not necessarily relevant how we got to that shortage level. It's what we would do if we reached that shortage level. That's the task at hand, as I understand it. So trying to back into a scenario whereby we reach that level is an interesting discussion, I must say, but it's not, I don't think it's relevant to the plan that we're putting together.
Well, I think it's relevant to what we do at that stage.
Well, of course, that's because that's the task at hand, is to say what we would do if we reached that shortage level, but not how we got there.
Well,
I mean, we don't have a choice. Every water provider in the state has to provide water.
It's not about assigning blame or anything like
that. No, I'm trying to figure out how we get an answer to an unanswerable question. So we can build a scenario out of parts and pieces to reach 40% or 30% or 50%. But the task is what would we do if we reached that shortage level? Mr. Dickens, could you weigh in on that? Am I understanding it correctly?
President Martin, I believe that's a correct understanding, that we are required to have the stage response, these different stages. What may cause those things, as you noted, are hypothetical situations that are that at best. When we look at the available pool of water supplies and water demands, that's where we start looking at how much opportunity is there to save, what is the value of that water, the utility of that water. And of course, as you go up that list, the water availability starts shrinking. And so we build a plan that uses communication, education, new incentives and conservation programs, and then perhaps enforcement to build a regime, if you will, or a portfolio, I guess is a better word, a portfolio of saving opportunities that would allow the agency to comply with those different stages should those occur.
My point still stands that this is an extreme situation. And if it's such an extreme situation, then what are we doing by still approving bill? Right.
Okay, so your comment is noted, Director Bronstein. Director Planbeck and Director Armitage have had their hands up for a while, and so now has Director Collins. So Director Planbeck.
Well, I would like to just weigh in on what Director Bronstein was saying, because I'm a little confused. I'm not concerned of how we get to 40%. I just don't understand exactly what 40% is. Is it a percentage of reduction of our water supply? What was related to me was that that's completely up to the board what a 40% reduction is. So it is a little like wishy-washy, kind of hard to decide. And I think I understand her concerns about building if we're having some drastic cutback like that and asking everybody to cut back that much and still building. However, that was not what I was going to ask. What I was going to ask is Matt Dickens had said that you address this issue of the ability to serve. And I know that I was the one that brought it up, and I thought it was not an issue that people were going to put in the actual words we use for those letters, which are well served or water availability letters, not immediate ability to serve. And I wonder, that did not get replaced. And in your list of stuff you did, I thought I heard you say that you fixed that, but it's not fixed. And I'm just concerned that immediate ability to serve means something different than what it was intended to mean, which is a well serve or a water availability letter. And I would like, please, to use the same terminology that the district or the agency uses for whatever that water availability letter is. If you call it a water availability letter or a well serve letter, that's what should be in here, not immediate ability to serve, which could be interpreted as something else. And I would ask that you change that, please.
Director Panbeck, could I ask a clarifying question? I'm not quite sure what you mean. I thought that by adding will serve letters, we were being more inclusive to cover.
Yeah, but it doesn't, Mr. Byrne, it doesn't say will serve. It doesn't say that. It says, it's fine. The intention of having will serve in there is fine. But what it says is.
Yeah, you might be looking at the version that was not the updated version, or are you?
Well, it was the one in the.
It says will serve.
It says will be updated. Oh, maybe this isn't the updated one. I was looking at the agenda. maybe that I should, okay, let me put my hand down and go and see if I can find the updated version and make sure that I'm complaining about something that I should really be complaining about or not. And I apologize if I've taken up time for no reason.
Okay, at this time, I'd like to ask Director Colley for his comment or question.
Yes, thank you. I thought I would take a stab at answering the kind of the comments that Beth had. I think that her focus on the initial focus on what gets us to stage four was intended then to ask the question, well, why wouldn't we move some sort of a moratorium on development from stage five to the lower and still catastrophic stage four? And I think that's the intent of her question. And I think that it's kind of a, it is a judgment. Oh my goodness, did I just go?
Ed?
Did I get, I think I'm back. My computer is just acting all kinds of flaky. So I think that the point I would make is that if it was a short-term crisis, a moratorium on development would essentially do no good. And if we ever get to that level of crisis, I would hope that we would be very engaged as a board and be looking at things like the question of how long the crisis was going to last, likely, and is this actual plan the best approach? And so I think we could make changes and likely would make changes on that actual day that we got to that level of crisis. So I don't know if that helps a little bit on why I would support the current plan without a change that I think she advocates for.
All right. Thank you, Director Colley. Director Armitage, you had something to add?
Thanks. I wanted to thank the, 47 members of the public as per what was just shared, who took the time to write in and share their concerns. As always, I enjoy hearing from the public and hearing their perspectives. And next, I want to say thank you to the staff for adding the exemptions for watering trees. As I stated before, I think it's important that we acknowledge how long it takes for trees to grow and that they provide essential ecosystem service. So I was really glad to see that added. I also appreciate that you added an exemption for homegrown food, since a member of the public, Ms. Dunn, had commented about that. And there may be families who grow food because they need to. So I appreciate that addition as well. My position hasn't changed since the last meeting. You know, last night we voted to adopt a new rate structure, which will increase rates for many customers and ratepayers. And in light of that, I am especially sensitive to the public comment that we received saying that customers understand that they have to do their part in each stage. But when we get to stage four, which we are calling a critical shortage, and I appreciate Director Brunstein trying to get some definition around that or to wrap our heads around what that looks like. But if we're using the word critical, I'm assuming it'll be critical and requires a 40% reduction. I feel that the agency needs to step up and do more, which includes pausing approval for new development, which adds to new demand while we ride out a scary situation of a stage four shortage that, you know, could be short-term, could be long-term. I feel like waiting until we're in a stage five emergency situation is not responsible and it's not fair to current ratepayers and customers. So I am asking once again for consideration that the pause on development be moved up to stage four in the ordinance. Lastly, I know we were told a number of times that this ordinance is a living document and it could be brought back in front of the board for modification when necessary. But I'd like to point out that it doesn't feel like a true option to me, since it would likely require a majority of the board wanting that to happen. And I don't see that happening with the current board makeup right now. So I feel like the time to have a chance at incorporating these concerns is now or never, for at least for me, my perspective. So thank you for allowing me to speak on that.
Thank you, Director Armitage. Director Planback, have something more to say?
Well, okay, I did look it up and I did have the right document in front of me. And yes, I did, Mr. Byrne, I think what you're talking about is that, yes, that was the right order for the well-served statements, but what the ordinance actually says is no statements, and instead of saying well-served or water availability, which I think is the term of art normally used for those, it says no statements of immediate ability to serve. And I am really concerned that somebody is going to say, well, immediate ability to serve doesn't mean a well-served letter. And I would like it to say a well-served letter, because that's what is meant here. And just so there is not a misunderstanding about that. And I thought that that was going to be changed, and nothing has changed. This is the same wording that was in here the last time. So it's on page 8 of 12.
I'm it has been corrected in the version online, and I think if others can
I looked online, it's not corrected online.
Maybe Matt speak to it. I just pulled it up off the website under the most recent item that's been distributed and posted, and it shows a red line version that says
I didn't see a red line version. Could you just read me what it says? I'm sorry, and then I won't, because I can't find it apparently.
So you're right, the statement is still the same. It says, and no statements of immediate ability to serve or provide potable water service. Then in parentheses, in quotes, it says will serve letters, end quote, parentheses.
Okay, I'm happy.
Okay, great.
Thank you. I'm sorry I couldn't find it.
No problem.
Thank you, Mr. Byrne, for your help there. Director Ozahowski.
If you look on stage 4, the water use reduction goal is a range between 30 and 40%. If you look at stage 3, that goal is 20 to 30%. So stage 3 and stage 4 share the 30%. And that goes for other ranges as well. So it's not just 40% for stage 4. And regarding a comment that was made recently saying that some board directors will vote one way in the future, I don't think that's fair. I think a lot of our directors are data driven, and if data shows, if the staff presents us with a particular data pattern, we will vote accordingly on best interest of our ratepayers. That's it for me. Back to you, President Martin.
Thank you for that, Director Ozahowski. Are there any other questions from the board before we call for the motion on this item? I do not see any. I would entertain a motion for item 5.3, approve a resolution adopting the approve an ordinance for water conservation and water shortage contingency.
So moved, Atkins.
Motion by Director Atkins.
Seconds.
Was that Director Ozahowski?
Yes, I second it.
Yes, all right, very good. Are there any questions? I see a hand up, Director Armitage.
Yes, thank you. I'd like to propose a substitute motion. I move to approve the ordinance with the modification that the section on pausing new development be moved to stage 4.
Okay, so Mr. Byrne, procedural question. Do we handle the motion to amend before we?
Correct. Yeah.
All right.
It's on the table and it's open to a second. And just for I would just say it sounds like it's the, is it subsection H, Director Armitage, or are you desiring to have more than just that?
I'm sorry, give me just one moment.
Subsection H is what you're talking about, which is But you may intend it's that's the no new potable water service.
Yes, yes. Yeah, thank you for the clarification.
Yeah, no problem.
Bronstein seconds.
All right, so we have a motion to amend and a second. Are there any questions from the board before we call for the vote?
Director Martin, we still haven't had public comment, although it's awkward to have it in the context of a substitute motion. I believe we ought to offer that. If this is potentially the final approval under this substitute motion.
All right. So the motion then becomes a substitute motion with the specific changes in it. Is that correct?
Correct. So it's been made, it's been moved and amended. So it's on the table. So we call for public comment and then we'll take them in the order of the substitute motion followed by, depending upon the outcome, we go back to the regular if it failed.
Okay. So Director Bronstein, are you seconding the motion to substitute motion?
Yes, I am.
All right. Are there any questions? Director Ozahosky has his hand up.
Mr. Matt Dickens, can you let us know how many ordinances have you reviewed when creating this ordinance for SCV?
Thank you, Director Ozahosky. We have reviewed not only existing legacy ordinance and rules in the from previous agencies here in the Valley, but we've also reviewed over a dozen or so ordinances across the state and throughout the industry.
Mr. Matt Dickens, would you say that you reviewed ordinances of water agencies similar in scope to ours?
Director Ozdrowski, yes, sir, I believe we have.
Thank you, Mr. Matt Dickens. Back to you, President Martin.
Okay, thank you, Director Ozahosky. Director Ford, do you have a comment or a question?
Yes, a procedural question regarding the substitute motion. Since we previously adopted the water shortage contingency plan with language that reflects the 50% or stage five level rather for the suspension of will serve letters, to use the language Director Planbeck used. And we then tonight adopted the urban water management plan with a water shortage contingency plan as formally approved as part of the urban water management plan. Would the approval of a change consistent with a motion mean that we would have to reopen those approvals to make the changes in the water shortage contingency plan and also the urban water management plan?
I'm not sure that there is an inconsistency in the level of detail in the water shortage contingency plan, but I'd have to turn that over to Matt.
We're saying Matt Dickens?
Yeah, Matt Dickens, yeah.
Okay.
Yes, thank you, Joe, and thank you, President Martin, and thank you, Director Ford, for that question. I'm reviewing the ordinance now, and I'll have to conduct as I'm looking through the ordinance, through the plan, I see mention of particular stages in the ordinance, though I don't see specific measures listed in the plan. So the way that we designed it is that in stage six, we would implement, or whatever stage, we would implement the stage of the ordinance should the board of directors or declare a particular shortage stage. So the way we linked it is provided some flexibility that either document could be updated. You can update the ordinance and we'd still be pointing to a certain stage. So we didn't say in the plan specifically that you would do this particular or these specific water use reduction measures or enforce these specific measures. We're saying you would do stage four, whatever stage four measures are in the ordinance.
Director Ford, go ahead. Do you have your hand still up?
Actually, I put it down and then put it back up, but thank you, President Martin. Actually, Matt, I think on page 30 of the plan, we have stage five, and as listed, it's a table. And it lists that the denial of potable service would be part of stage five.
Thank you for pointing that out, Director Ford. I was looking at an earlier stage. So I would defer that procedural question to Joe.
Yeah, so my interpretation is that I don't think it's a problem. Obviously, you want them to be as synced as possible, but it doesn't prohibit the adoption of either. And it's something that we could potentially clean up if the issue is one that we want to make sure. But I don't think it's an impediment to us adopting the motion that is on the table.
All right, so unless there's any further questions, I would ask either Mr. Byrne or Director Armitage to restate the motion that you're making so we're all clear on what we're doing.
I'm happy to handle it, Director Armitage. I think the motion is to approve the ordinance with the recommended changes, with the one edit being moving from stage five, subsection H, to stage four. So that would be from section 10, 9.1H would be moved to section nine, which is stage four. Everything else would be the same.
That's the extent of this change?
Correct. And that's all the right. Provisions related to the provision of new potable water service.
Okay. All right. So we have a motion and a second. We've had a lot of discussions. Is there any further questions?
To be clear, this change precludes further development when we get to stage four.
Correct.
In other words, right now, stage five is where it stops, but this moves it earlier to stage four.
Right. It precludes the provision of new water service as articulated now in section 9.1H. In section.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Before we call for the vote on this substitute motion, do we have any public comment, April?
We do. Just one moment while I open it up here. Ms. Dunn, please hit star six and you may begin your public comment.
Yes, I should have raised my hand when you were doing 5.2 and 5.3 because I thought you were going to discuss whether you should have another meeting or what you were going to do about Mr. Silverstein. Anyway, so much for that. What I wanted to talk to you about is the use of potable water on the medians, and I see that if they are drip irrigated, they were okay. That at least to a point. And then I thought about, well, what about the people that are using recycled water? And eventually in the community, there will be more and more people using it, not only in the medians, but in their own yards. And so I was thinking, shouldn't they have some sort of sort of like what we've had to do if we had to put up with no median watering, maybe they should have their recycled water go down to the alluvium and the groundwater and recharge that area instead of being in the medians and or even in the yards for their irrigation, et cetera. Anyway, it's just a thought. But I did, going back to the 5.2 and 5.3, can that be opened up again in order to make the decision on what you want to do about Mr. Silverstein? Anyway, that's my comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dunn.
Are there any other public comments, April?
Yes, there is. Okay. Mr. Masnada, please unmute. You may begin your public comment.
Thank you, April.
Yeah, this is Dan Masnada, speaking as a member of the public, although one that knows a little bit about water. As far as the board's action with respect to the 40 versus 50%, I'll leave that up to the board, but I do want to provide an example where, well, and first of all, I'm really amazed that the newest director on the board would question the judgment of the board or a future board regarding actions that it might take, presumably an action that the general manager would bring to the board. But there may be a 40% scenario where it would not be best or appropriate to halt any new development. And to use the example that General Manager Stone cited, it would be a scenario where you have an outage along the aqueduct, let's say south or north of the where our, the bank, the agency's banking facilities are. And being that an aqueduct is a linear system, if there was an earthquake, it would only affect one section of the aqueduct. You would have a schedule by the Department of Water Resources to bring that section of the aqueduct back online within, say, 6 months, even though it during that 6 month period, there is an impact to the extent of 40% or even 50% of the agency's water supply. But in that event, you wouldn't necessarily need to stop development. Another scenario that would involve the State Water Project, if there was a failure of one of the islands in the Delta, where, you know, in the past, the state or the Department of Water Resources has provided not estimates that it might take up to 2 years to resolve that issue and fully restore the water supply that that the agency would be getting from the State Water Project. And although the water from the banking programs may be available during that period of time, its basic state water supply, other than what's conserved in reservoirs south of the Delta, would not be available to the agency. And then the agency may, at that time, and appropriately so, consider taking action at the 40% level as opposed to the 50% level, mainly due to the duration of the event. So hopefully that provides a little bit more explanation to Director Braunstein, and I wish the board the best as far as the vote it takes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Masnada. Ms. Kaufman, please unmute yourself and you may begin your public comment.
Hi, sleepyheads. I am just thinking of a scenario that may or may not relate, but it's just my own thoughts, which sometimes twist around. Director Braunstein, I don't believe you lived here in Santa Clarita back when we had the 1994 earthquake. But first of all, we our two freeways, the 14 and the 5, both broke. So we ended up being landlocked. And what happened was the state, of course, told us, ordered us to not drink our water. It was not potable. And so we had to wait about 3 days, if I recall, maybe even longer, for all these semis to come in from way up north, from Chicago, and I can't remember from where else, to drive down with beer bottles that had been refilled with drinking water for all of us to collect from various fire stations and parks and whatever. But there was no potable water anywhere. And none of us really knew how long this would go on. And there were some deaths, of course, here, and there were a lot of fires. Homes were burned to the ground, roads were burned, animals were lost. A lot of tragedies occurred. So where do we put that? Is that a stage 4? Is that a stage 5? Would it have been a stage 6 if it had been as bad as the San Francisco one, where the freeway pancaked? But that to me was terrifying at that time. My little boy was a little boy, and I remember asking him about an hour later, "Honey, are you okay?" And he said, "No, I'm not." And I said, what can I do for you? And he said, "I just wish that were the big one." So we had lived through it. We had survived it. So I'm just trying to point out to all of us, let's not forget that earthquake was a terrible experience, and some of you are as old as I am. At least you look it, sorry. But let's recall that was an awful thing, and we were landlocked for a long time, and we didn't know what to do. We really didn't know what to do. So let's put that into thinking process. What would we have done? Where would we have placed that? And we didn't know how long we would be in that scary situation. That's it. Thank you, people.
Thank you, Ms. Kaufman. Is there any further public comment? I'll ask one more time. Is there any further public comment? Seeing none, Mr. President, there is no further comment, public comment.
Thank you, April. We do have a motion for a substitute motion and a second on the floor. So unless there's any further discussion or questions, I would ask you to call the roll for the vote on the substitute motion.
Director Atkins, how do you vote?
No.
Director Kelly, how do you vote?
No.
Director Ford, how do you vote?
No.
Director Bronstein, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Armitage, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Colley, how do you vote?
No.
Director Cooper, how do you vote?
No.
Director Osuhosky, how do you vote?
No.
Director Planbeck, how do you vote? Director Planbeck, you're muted.
Yes.
Vice President Gladbeck, how do you vote?
No.
Vice President Mortensen, how do you vote?
No.
President Martin, how do you vote?
No.
Thank you. The substitute motion fails.
All right. So we can now go back to the original motion was to approve the ordinance as included in your board packet, even though the updated version is online. We have a motion and a second. Unless there's any further discussion, I would ask Madam Secretary to call the roll for the vote.
Director Cooper, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Atkins, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Ford, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Colley, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Bronstein, how do you vote?
No.
Director Kelly, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Planbeck, how do you vote?
No.
Director Armitage, how do you vote?
No.
Vice President Mortensen, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Gladbeck, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Osuhosky, how do you vote?
Yes.
President Martin, how do you vote?
Yes.
This item passes. That's ordinance number 02.
Very good. Thank you, members of the board. Thank you, members of the public. Thank you, especially to the staff for the presentations, the responses to all the questions and comments. Thank you for coming with the A-plus team. All of our experts were on board to answer all of our questions. We are very fortunate to have a talented staff as they are talented and dedicated to meeting our water supply demands. So with that, we will move to adjournment, and we are adjourned. There's no vote required. So thank you all, and we'll see you next time.
And I just want to say to staff on my own behalf that even though I don't agree